John Cole Scott of Closed-End Fund Advisors is here, and we're talking about where the closed-end fund business is now through the first half of the year in a bonus edition of The Navigator. Welcome to The Navigator, where we talk about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success with the help of closed-end funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, a unique industry organization that represents all facets of the closed-end fund industry, from users and investors to fund sponsors and creators. If you're looking for excellence beyond indexing, the Navigator is going to point you in the right direction. And today, it brings us back to John Cole Scott, president at Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia, which is online at cefadvisors.com. And we're about to dig into the funds research, which you can do yourself at cefdata.com. John is also chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance, which you can learn about at aicalliance.org. John Cole Scott, it's great to chat with you again.
Great to be here, Chuck.
So we have gotten through the first half of the year, and you and I try to talk at least once every quarter, but when you get to a certain point, kind of like closed-end funds, the way you check in on stocks with earnings reports, you kind of want to get through the season and then go, okay, where are we and what have we gotten to? And it's a really interesting time in closed-end funds because if I am a discount buyer, every light is flashing green right now, isn't it?
Many funds are at deep discounts in historical ways. I mean, we just recently held our second quarter closed-end fund BDC and fund research call, and I want to give a couple of highlights from that. You know, right now the universe is about $730 billion in gross assets, and that breaks down to about $400 billion in the listed closed-end fund and interval fund market, and about $280 billion in the BDC, both the listed and non-listed market, and the non-listed side's been growing fast, as we've chatted before. Discounts, they are so wide. You mentioned how wide they were. 93% of the months end since 1998, they've been narrower than they are today. And so that's very attractive. And that may sound silly wide, but munis are 99.3%. Only 2 month ends since I was a sophomore at William & Mary have closed end funds been cheaper at month end.
That's a big buying signal. But of course, you also want to be a discerning buyer. You want to try to make sure that you're not just being fooled by the discounts, right?
Absolutely. And that's why our firm really goes into comparable discounts, relative discounts, and absolute discounts. Again, one's to yourself, one's to your peer group, and one's to your actual NAV. And then there's times, like for many BDC investors that start from closed-end funds like we did 10 years ago, have trouble buying premium BDCs, but there are many reasons why that's true. And often a 10-15 premium can be a better deal than a 10-15 discount in the same universe in the same week.
You have other takeaways, again, as we've turned the corner towards the later stages of the year. What else is going on that people should be knowing about if they're looking at closed-end funds?
Yeah, so the next item is really to let people know where the yields are. Taxable funds have an equal weight yield of 9.2%, and muni funds are tax-free, 4.4%. But we wanted to dig under the hood a little bit and look at dividend growth the last year. For the universe, it's actually almost flat. So it sounds like you would have, very boring work in your portfolio. However, dividend cuts are down over 1%, right, over 2% from a year ago for U.S. stock funds and world stock funds. The reason is, Chuck, those are equity-based yields and equity returns were down last year, so that those have to come down because they're not bond payments. They're just realized gains over time. And munis down 22%, over 200 cuts in the last year in that sector. However, senior loans, BDCs, REIT real assets, and MLP funds, the yields are higher by over a point, or around a point. Very good to have thought strategically a year ago where to put your closed-end fund portfolio.
And if you didn't do that a year ago, are you too late to join the party now?
No, because discounts are attractive, and as long as you take your thesis of what you think will happen. So right now, we're overweighting munis again because their leverage is probably topping off. There could be some more rate increases, but I think there's less in the future than in the past. I mean, that makes sense to me at least. And the fund sponsors will likely convert some of the leverage to variable and will have very good discount math once dividends can go up again. But it could be mid to late 24, possibly sooner, possibly longer. But buying after carnage is such a good close of fund decision. You should be uncomfortable with the last 3 to 12 months of the funds you're buying today, because it looks bad. It should look better later. That's the closed-end fundedness that's often attracted to discount buyers.
Yeah, well, closed-end funds are the classic, hey, the market's putting it on sale. I mean, literally, the market is putting it on sale. So if you are a for-sale buyer, this is the time to get in, is when it's the most uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just thinking about players in this space, we just updated our, you know, the who's the biggest holder. The largest active holder is Saba Capital. And a lot of people that own these funds are aware of Saba. They have a much better marketing team than I do, even though I've got the podcast. And they've been busy. And just for perspective, they're just about $1.8 billion in closed-end fund exposure, U.S. listed. And they've got $700 million, or 40% of that, in BlackRock, $347 million in Franklin Templeton, that's 20%, and $178 million in Nuveen, that's about 10%. And of course, that's not their only positions, but that's where they're focusing. And those are not just, they are large players, but there's a lot of funds they're involved with. And we expect a very busy activist season next year.
Well, as an investor, as a small investor or an advisor who's talking to clients, my assumption is you don't mind having an 800-pound gorilla in the room of shareholders, because that's who gets to throw their weight around and maybe gets to say, hey, guys, you know, let's narrow this discount. Let's do something that's going to make us all a bunch of money. So is Saba now big enough that as a shareholder, if I'm looking at two funds and I'm trying to decide which one do I want to go with, they both are in an area that I like, they both have attractive discounts, et cetera, but one has Saba there as a big shareholder, does that become a tiebreaker for me?
It definitely can. I mean, I would say that you have to also recognize that there are times where an activist investor can get things like green mail and work out a deal where they get bought out in a way that us can't. But I will say their presence and their focus does keep discounts generally tighter, because it's a put in the universe. Another place, again, I think this kind of comes out of this conversation, is termed funds are another event that usually happens, never guaranteed, but often happens, and more commonly in the newer funds, to get a potential exit at NAV at current wide discounts.
Well, speaking of term funds, I want to take some time here to go over a question or two that we've gotten specifically about term funds, because, among other things, well, we did a bonus Navigator recently with Eric Boughton from Matisse Capital. John in St. Louis wrote me a note that said that Eric Boughton talked about closed-end term trusts, funds that have a liquidation date, and he was wondering, why is it not stamped on the fund so that it's the ABC Growth 2029 fund? Because as John wrote, I don't know if any of the closed-end funds I own have a termination date. And from what I heard Eric talking about, I'd like to be searching for funds with a termination date because it adds value to any fund I can buy at a discount. So let's start with that, because some funds do have a date on them, but not many.
Correct. And again, newer funds, pretty much, you know, the last 30 or so IPOs, that goes back to, I believe, to late 2018, your fund will have a term structure. You know, in our data file, you know, our ginormous data file, we have all the specific components of that term. But the general thing for these funds will have a liquidity event. And if over X percent vote for a tender or don't tender, right, it will become a perpetual fund. I could envision a rough, like if a fund were to come out and be liquidable in, you know, a March 2020 type of period, there are provisions for the board to extend it under reasonable circumstances. But newer funds, the answer is yes. It's in either the name term trust will be in like a half the names or sometimes even the date. And again, it's something that, you know, institutional investors, we can reach out to these funds and maybe ask them to do that to make it more easy for retail to understand the situation.
Well, and another question we got from Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland, and Rich was talking about how he couldn't really find anything related to CEF data on liquidation dates. And he finds himself put off about, you know, not finding about when a term trust terminates. But he also was worried about, you know, how real is it when you have a fund that has a condition that allows them to convert to a perpetual trust? Because, I mean, what Eric Boughton was saying, what Rich was picking up on, what you were talking about is, yeah, a termination date can be a goose to what you're expecting in terms of returns. But do you count it if they can convert to a perpetual trust?
So I would say in some of the term trusts that happened before this recent CEF 2.0, the language was a little vaguer and kind of it wasn't the way they brought the fund to market. I mean, it was part of the sales pitch to the advisors and their clients, but not as focused. It has happened, so you have to consider it. I would argue that any fund sponsor that wants to stay active in the primary and have the advisors willing to offer these funds to their clients would be very protective of not breaching that trust. And we would, if ever given counsel, would suggest that they only do it if it's March 2020 type of behavior. And it's not that it gets stopped, it just gets delayed 90 days. I would have high confidence in that because it's the only way new funds will get created eventually when the IPO market reopens.
So there it is. It's really there to be an escape clause in case of an emergency. It's not meant to be, hey, we can get out of the deal we set up.
Well, I put it this way. If any fund sponsor does this and then a Saba or Bulldog or other activist investor is engaged with them in the future, it's going to be a marketing bullet point that's going to be not positive for the fund and very positive for other people voting and be hard to defend management in that behavior.
So there you go. The answer, Rich, in Orchard Beach, don't worry a whole lot. It's the ripcord there if they have to pull the parachute or hit the ejector button. John, we have to hit the ejector button on this time together, but this is great. Always is chatting with you. I know we're going to do it again soon. Be well.
Happy to. Remember, the quarterly replay is cefadvisors.com/quarterly, slide deck posted publicly on the website. See you soon.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. And yep, that's me. And you can learn all about my hour-long weekday podcast by going to moneylifeshow.com or by looking wherever you find your favorite podcasts. To learn more about closed-end funds, interval funds, and business development companies, check out AICAlliance.org, the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. They're on Facebook and LinkedIn at AIC Alliance. Thanks to my guest, John Cole Scott, president of Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia, the chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance. His firm is online at cefadvisors.com, and you can dig into their data and research by going to cefdata.com. John's on Twitter, too. He is at John Cole Scott. Now, the Navigator podcast is available every Friday unless we trot out a bonus episode like this one. But if you want to make sure you don't miss us whenever we're coming out, the easiest way to do that is by following or subscribing to it on your favorite podcast app. And we will be back on Friday with a new edition of The Navigator. Can't wait to chat with you again then. But until then, happy investing, everybody.